Vegas Bad Boys Podcast presents Matt Michaels, People I Don't Hate.
Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here along with Sin City Steve. And today we're going to introduce a lot of you to someone that you hopefully will get a chance to reach out and see or listen to doing wrestling announcing and commentary with the Wildcat Sports, Wildcat TV. Wildcat is one of our favorite organizations. You know, basically, we love those Hawk Aries boys. And today, we're going to introduce you to Mr. Sammy Kiss. Sammy, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. Thank you. Doing good. And one of the things that I didn't mention is that you also are a podcast co-host of the Nerds of the Squared Circle.
Yeah, that's right.
What is it?
You know, it's such a, I know it's such a mouthful of a name. When I promote the podcast, I'll usually, you know, I'll be talking to someone about pro wrestling or Wildcat Sports or something like that. And I'll mention that I have a podcast, and they was like, "What's the name of the podcast?" And when I say "Nerds of the Squared Circle," people always have to do a double take. I've gotten used to saying "not SC," you know, but it's even that's a lot of letters, you know.
Right.
But it's a podcast that's part of a bigger podcast network on Somewhat Nerdy, has podcasts about comic books and movies and a lot of nerd culture. And the genesis of it was Snarf Chris, who hosts the entire network, he is a big wrestling fan. And he would periodically throw in anecdotes about either WWE or whatever about pro wrestling. And everyone else on the show would kind of either roll their eyes or be like, they had no idea what he was talking about. And he realized that, like, the only way I'm really going to get this wrestling stuff in is if I just start a whole thing just about wrestling. But then he had to go out and find someone who knew about wrestling. He was able to find me and another great wrestling fan, and the dude with the headband who also used to do the show with us. And it's been a lot of fun. We started about 4 years ago. The pandemic kind of put a big hiatus on that, including a lot of things. So we haven't been able to do some new shows for a while, but funnily enough, we're actually, now that things are not over, but like things are calming down at least a little bit better, that we're thinking about restarting it soon. So maybe in January 2021, look for new Nerds of Squared Circle stuff.
And you know, you said pandemic, let's just talk about it a little bit. How has it affected you in terms of, you know, the shows that would have ran between March and now? What has been going on with that?
So I know that you guys have had Hawks, Eric, Luke, and PJ on y'all's show, right?
Yeah.
So the last Wildcat show we did was in February, and that was a free show that we did at the mall in Kenner. And that's the one where PJ jumped off the top 50 feet and it went viral and went everywhere. And like, we had never been hotter. We had just done the Revolution Rumble a few months before where we drew 2,000 fans. It was one of the biggest indie shows, like an unheard of gate for promotion. Like, because when people say independent pro wrestling, sometimes people will bring up like Ring of Honor or Impact Wrestling, and I love both of those promotions, but they're backed by big corporate companies. When I think of independent wrestling, I mean, this company lives and dies by the fans. Like, we have no money backing. This is genuinely independently run. We run the shows, and what we make off the shows is what we use to promote. And Wildcat is one of the most successful ones by being able to garner the big crowds we are and move forward. So we had the Rumble, which was our anniversary show that had over 2,000 fans. Then, as a kind of a thank you for that, we did a free show where we went viral with PJ jumping off the top. So we'd never been hotter. We had all this momentum, and then the world shut down. So talk about terrible, terrible timing. We had a show that was scheduled for March, and we were all the way up until like I think a few days before we were hoping like maybe things won't be so bad and we'll be able to do it. But of course we had to cancel that show.
Man.
And then all but everything for at earliest is going to be 2021 for us to be able to start running shows again. Right. Unfortunately.
Definitely.
Yeah. Man.
Okay, go ahead. So as far as just bring up people up to speed a little bit, as far as what all do you do with Wildcat? Obviously, we mentioned commentating, but how far is that scope of everything that you do with Wildcat?
Yeah, that's a loaded question. I do everything and I do nothing. It's one of those things where I was passionate about breaking into the business. And I loved Wildcat Sports as a consumer, as a business, as a wrestling fan. I was just really drawn to them. I've been a wrestling fan in Louisiana my whole life. And it's one of those things where back when the NWA existed and WCW, they would run shows in Louisiana. And then there's also the glory days of like Mid-South wrestling and stuff like that, where they would run stuff in the Superdome.
Right.
But since the late 90s, Louisiana has mostly been when WWE stops by they have like a double time cycle. They would go to every city twice in a year.
Right.
So you would get wrestling twice a year, and then occasional little small shows would pop up and then die off. And Wildcat had like a mission statement of, we want to bring wrestling back to New Orleans, back to Louisiana. And which was headed up by Luke Hawks. And I was really drawn to that because it was like, yeah, please, that would be great. And there are other promotions that are around. I mean, you know, in the South, there's a lot of great promotions. Texas is its own thing. It's like it's a whole other beast. And there's Florida, but those are so far away. There's a lot of space in between where you weren't really getting your wrestling fix. And because of the spirit of what we wanted to bring wrestling, or Wildcat Sports wanted to bring, based on the history of Mid-South, it's a very old school traditions, you know, no BS, you know, doing things the right way kind of wrestling promotion. Right. And because of that, you can go, you don't need to watch the television show. You can watch the show and you can see the stories as you're going along. And it was something that I was so drawn to because there are other wrestling promotions in the area that have popped up off the back of the popularity of Wildcat Sports. But there's just something about the way Wildcat would always do things. I was like, I gotta be a part of that. I gotta get involved with that. And I'm not an athlete. You know, I love the wrestling. So it was one of those things where I just tried to pay my dues as best I can to work my way up. And in the course of that, I've basically done everything other than being an in-ring performer. I've done almost everything else. I've done timekeeping. I've done some refereeing. I've done some backstage announcing. Right now, I'm mostly the on-air commentator, and I do the hosting of the television show, where we air our television shows. Right now we're airing all of our stuff on YouTube because we're not able to create new content. But yeah, I was told like, you're the Tony Schiavone, which is a high thing to go up to, but that's kind of what I'm aspiring to be, is to be the Tony Schiavone of Wildcat Sports. We'll see. I'm still working towards it. You know, I'm always trying to learn and get better. But I guess that's kind of where I see myself. If Chris Harper, I don't know if you know Harper. If Harper is Bobby Heenan, then I'm Tony Schiavone.
Well, you gotta if you're gonna be Schiavone, you gotta get that studded earring in your left ear.
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, there's the goatee and then the studded earring. He's got the glasses thing working for him right now. It's a good look. I like it. I like it a lot. Yeah.
Who, you know, you brought up Schiavone. Who is some of the people that you were entertained by growing up in terms of commentators?
Well, it's interesting because I grew up in Louisiana, which is deep Jim Crockett, WCW, NWA territory. But the friends that I made that were into wrestling were into the WWE, the WWF at the time. Right. So I was sort of a WWE fan, but I was always kind of on the out. It's bad enough when you're a kid and you're a wrestling fan because you usually get made fun of for liking wrestling in general. But then I'm also like not even in with the wrestling fans because they're all watching WCW and I'm over here watching WWE. So I was a big fan of Jim Ross. I think an underrated announcing team is Jim Ross and Paul Heyman. It only lasted about 9 months or so. And it was very jarring at the time because for years it was the team of Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler, which is like the dream team. It's like one of those top five, arguably the best commentator team in wrestling history, right? Because of the way that they bounced off each other.
Right.
But then when Paul Heyman sat down, he just did not do things like Jerry Lawler did. So it's very, very different. And when you go back on it, a lot of people, because it's the WCW versus WWE, was the overall like story arc on the show at the time, which a lot of people don't care for because the lack of star power. I mean, you could do a whole show just on talking about the botching of the Alliance storyline, but the, because of that, people don't, I think, recognize how strong the interplay between those two guys are. And that's something that I kind of carry with me now. I think it's something that's really kind of lost in the way people do commentary and wrestling now. It's very different from how the standard was back in the 80s and the 90s and even the early 2000s.
Right.
Where now they have three guys and it feels like they're all giving the same kind of point of view. It's, I don't want to say pandering, but it's a very speaking to the novice listener. They speak only in the jargon of letting you know what we assume you don't know. And there's not as much of a voice for the longtime listener, which they try to do a little better on AEW and other promotions will try to do. MLW does that really well. But it's something that's kind of lost now. And what I always thought of in commentary was, is they're supposed to represent us in the audience. Like they're the people speaking what we're thinking. And that dynamic works best when you have a split. You got one guy who's for the good guys. You got one guy that's for the bad guys. And then they obviously clash with each other. Because one guy wants this guy to win, the other one wants that guy to win. And it makes you feel more compelled in the story of the match. And that's something I try to bring to Wildcat, especially, again, putting over Chris Harper, because he's such a good, you know, POS. Like, he's great at, you know, riling things up. I mean, you know, if he was someone that ever got an opportunity somewhere else, I fear for him being cancel cultured because he just has no filter, which is great. Because then I can call him out on it, and it creates a good dynamic of drama that hopefully enhances the match. Because that's the whole point. I think a lot of announcers or personalities in general in wrestling now, the sentiment seems to be everyone wants to get themselves over. Everyone's trying to make themselves something, and no one's working towards the whole, trying to make the product better.
Yeah,
and that's what I try to do is try to. I'm not here to get me over. I'm here to get you over. I'm trying to get this thing over. And I think if more people try to have that perspective on it, I think things are better. I think the business is really good right now and really bad, depending on how you look at it, on those kinds of things.
Without a doubt, man. And now something that you brought up there that was really interesting. You mentioned your favorite commentary duo being, JR and Heyman. Let's contrast that with how a lot of the commentary is today. They've seemingly gone to, you know, they've almost all promotions have gone away from the two-person booth model, and now they're going into a three-person booth model. What are your feelings on that?
It's a standard that I think is harder to do. It's no dissimilar than two people having a conversation versus three people having a conversation. When you're talking to someone one-on-one, it's simple, wait for my beat, and then you go, and vice versa, and you can bounce off each other. Just like in a wrestling match, if it's triple threat matches typically feel more convoluted than one-on-one matches. That doesn't mean that they're bad, and doesn't mean I don't like triple threats. It's just you have to take a different approach to them because of the way things are not focused. Even a fatal four-way, not that I'm recommending a four-man booth, but you can pair off at least that way in that you can focus on one thing. So I think at least what I've noticed is when you're doing three-man booths, it's a lot of someone waiting for their turn to speak. And that gets worse in the sense that now everyone feels a little more neutral. I guess you could say Corey Graves is a heel. And I guess you could argue that Samoa Joe is the heel role on Raw, but they're not really, you know?
Yeah, you just hit on one of my biggest gripes with that
three-man booth. Joe was one of my trainers. Joe is a natural in terms of understanding the business and and getting it. And he does have certain heel pushes, but what's really funny is that they've been giving Byron Saxton heel stuff to say as well, and it doesn't flow because now you're kind of confused. You said it very, very well. You're there to interpret for the fans what they should be feeling, basically.
Yeah.
You know, now the wrestlers are doing 99.9% of that in the ring. If you took away commentary, they could still tell a story in the ring. You don't need, obviously, you go to a show, you're not hearing the commentary. And the booth is so important. I think one of the reasons that that Raw booth kind of fails is because who's the guy in the middle? Who's the third person?
Tom Phillips.
That's it. See, I honestly don't even know his name, even though I've heard his voice for so long, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And that's a problem.
You can interchange him with Vic Joseph and Michael Cole. I mean, Michael Cole is a established guy now, so you recognize Michael Cole, but. And they're looking for that. Like, they want you to basically be able to interchange anybody there. There's no personality. They're not a person. They're a brand.
Right.
He's playing the middle guy that is not a personality. Whereas Jim Ross is the character. Like, at this point, you almost know exactly what Jim Ross is going to say or not. To the point where sometimes he even says heelish things on AEW just by giving his opinion on things, which is inadvertently, that too. It goes against some of the stories that they're trying to tell. Which is why I think people are getting him a little bit of flack on it, because I think he's going out of his way to talk about the things that the other two guys aren't talking about. But he's like, well, Excalibur's not saying this, and Tony's not saying this. Someone should say it. I'm going to say it. But it's not his role in the thing, because, again, it's another three-man booth where unless they put in Taz there, there's no heel. So if you're going to talk about somebody negative, there's no one to bring it up in the dichotomy of the guys.
Whereas
on Raw, so people are just saying things. So it's just people just pointing out things, and that's not really storytelling. That's just observation,
right?
Which is fine, but you don't need that. I can watch a show and go, "Well, he did that," and I think a lot of people think that's all commentary is. You just say the moves they're doing, but that's not the point. The point is to tell the story try to reinforce the story that the wrestlers are trying to tell.
I think that there's. As much as the King was good at being a heel, he also relied on slapstick type jokes, you know, jokes that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but Jesse Ventura, I don't think there's ever been a better heel announcer to set the bar, because he did one thing correctly, and that was he stuck to the fact that the people that he was talking about who were heels in his eyes were doing the right things. And we don't see that anymore.
I think something that there's always an inherent motivation in wrestling, which is to win. And I think that's a baseline that sometimes gets lost in translation.
Right.
That you can always go to that. People don't have to be quarreling. People don't have to have an overarch drama to have a story inherent in the wrestling.
Right.
But something that Jesse did very, very well, he would always enforce the motivation.
Right.
And try to tell you in the audience, hey, it's important for this person to win because of, and he's one of the last person I remember bringing up the financial gains you get from winning. Like he's the only person that he would always bring up like, well, yeah, if he wins, he's going to get a big payday out of this.
Right.
And he could walk out, but he's not going to make any money. And he would bring that up as a way, which I know that they've tried to move away from because they don't want the rest it to feel that kind of story to the crowd, like talking about the financials of things.
Well, it's also
that really helps the heels. I was like, they need to win. I want to win this title because it's better for my career. It's not just about pride. It's about your career and your success as an athlete.
I think something that can piggyback off of that, which is really hard nowadays to do something like that in commentary because of the fact that the fans can get on the internet and basically they know that, hey, this dude is getting a baseline salary. What the fuck?
Right? Exactly. And that's the thing, is that it's a very different business in general, and people are so much more knowledgeable. I have the benefit of being able to do the kind of commentary work that I think I enjoy more because of my station in the industry. Like, I'll do stuff for Wildcat Sports, and I've started doing work with Hurricane Pro and a few other promotions in Texas, where we'll do stuff for Title Match Network or Fight TV. And when they're more independent guys, you can't assume that the audience is going to know about them, especially if it's not like indie darling guys. Like, it's not the people that the people are bringing in. So I get to kind of do the way WWE kind of instigates their fan, their commentary, to do it. But the difference is that my audience actually doesn't know. Like, I get to talk to you about like our new Revolution champion, Jace Valor, and his motivations, because there is no webpage about Jace Valor.
Yep.
So it's more crucial for me to tell you about it. But when you're watching WWE and they have weekly programming and you're telling me the same thing over and over and over again, if you're a new fan, you don't notice it.
Right.
But if you've listened to it over and over again, it's like, okay, I know. And it can be to the point where you start tuning it out. And because of that kind of base, you know, WWE is the standard, so anyone that's doing anything else tries to go against it. Wrestling has been kind of moved away from, like, there's a lot of, I would argue that most, the indie wrestling style does not necessitate commentary, because it tells a very fast-paced, the drama, it's a drama of attrition and showing off. That's cool. Move this. So the only thing you're really listening for is, I don't know what that move was called. What was that move called?
Right.
You know, which, for better or for worse, I'm not knocking that style. It's not my particular cup of tea. I like more storytelling. I watch a lot of wrestling, you know, both for my job and just in general. And I tend to gravitate to what I'm not getting a lot of. I know that before, when there was a lot of lumbering big men in the main event, you want more cruiserweight action. But then when you start getting more cruiserweight action, you're like, okay, well, now I have that. So I don't yearn for that anymore. So I yearn for something else.
Right.
It's interesting. It kind of goes to the, like, you could argue that the hottest things happening in AEW, which is like taking that indie style, the Ring of Honor, New Japan, hybrid, America style, made their own promotion. But the hottest stuff is like that old school stuff that Cody's doing, and like the stuff with Jericho, which is not that style, because they're giving you so much of it. The things that are standing out are the things that are not doing that.
Right.
So it's weird how, like, it's kind of come full circle, that it's kind of the business moves in cycles like that. It's like, you know, once you get too much of this thing, people kind of want something else. Look at the stuff going on with Roman Reigns. Like, that's the stuff that people are loving right now. And that's, you know, I hate it when people say, like, there's not a lot of work rate, because they're working their asses off. Like,
oh yeah,
you know, it's not easy to express, just to be expressive, you know, to act for 30 minutes while you're beating up on someone, and to tell the story of being aggressive, and tell, you know, like, that focus that they have with those close cameras in the Thunderdome, where they have everything mic'd, so everything they're saying, it's like a live play of the sense of, like, everything they're saying. And then he cried in the ring. It's like all of that stuff, like, if any of that was off the mark, it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
You know, like, it all has to be consistent, because it has to feel real. So even though, no, they weren't doing like flips off the top rope or anything like that in terms of work rate, compared to like what Sasha and Bayley did in the match after.
Right.
I thought that was one of my favorite matches I've seen all year, was Roman, the two matches that Roman and Jey Uso.
Well,
I know I'm rambling.
I know. I'll throw one more point on that, and then Steve, you can jump in. But and I don't know when this is actually airing, so if you're listening or watching this, just think back to right before Halloween, where you had SmackDown after the Hell in Cell, and now Uso has to pay up and show that he's going to be faithful. It was such a beautiful build, and the brilliance of it was the fact that Roman not once had to raise his voice.
Exactly.
You yes. don't see that, yeah. and therefore now you're fucking invested.
It's amazing how it's a cliche statement. It's not what you do, but how you do it.
Absolutely.
And I think people have gotten really obsessed with, I got to do something that nobody's ever done before. Sometimes I get frustrated when I'm watching like these gimmick matches and I can tell that they're going like, we got to do something that nobody's done before. I'm like, well, you could just do what somebody's, what this established thing and do it really, really well. And people will, if you do something really well, people will like it.
Right.
I don't think that there's anything or any argument on that. So, but sometimes especially if I'm watching a fight and it's a heated rivalry and you spend 20 minutes creating some contraption, I think, why are you doing that?
Right.
Like motivation wise, like going back to what we said with Jesse Ventura or comments, like if I was watching that on commentary, the story of that is I want to be innovative, but why are you trying to be innovative if you're in a blood feud?
Right.
If you're in a showcase match where like, I think it's why the ring, Money in the Bank still works really well. Even now, similar to the Royal Rumble, is that those stories are built on, this is your opportunity to stand out from the crowd in the wrestling business and move up.
Yep.
So if you're in that match and you're doing something crazy, that's the point. You're there to make a name for yourself. The story of the Rumble is make a name for yourself. You got to beat all these guys. And if you do, then you deserve to go to the Mania. And if you win the Money in the Bank, you deserve. But also, I'm never getting the spotlight. There are guys in the Rumble that are never going to get it. That's their only shot at getting to be champion, you know? So they got to make a name for themselves there. But if you're having a Hell in a Cell match, it's a different story. You know, it's like
right.
not all gimmicks are made the same. And I think, again, it's just different. I hate sounding like one of those old wrestling fan codgers, like back in my day kind of thing. But it's just because it's just different. And I'm not going to say that it's bad. It's just different. And it's not. It creates its own new set of problems. You create an answer, right. but then it creates issues no matter which way you go.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned that you don't want to be talking about all back in my day and things like that. But I'm going to ask you another question that's going to kind of get into that same vein. You mentioned Jesse Ventura. You mentioned Michael Cole. Obviously, both of those guys were great on the mic doing commentary. But also, both of those guys had distinct personalities. Yes. And especially not just in the commentating booth, but when they were acting as backstage interviewers or interviewing, you know, main in-ring talent. Whereas now it's become a trope where backstage interviewers are perceived to be nameless, faceless robots with absolutely yeah. no personality. Obviously that's largely due, in my opinion, to, you know, put the spotlight firmly on that in-ring talent. But again, there was a time period where, you know, interviewers had distinct personalities. They had their own various idiosyncrasies and things that made them stand out. And thus the audience kind of developed a little bit of an emotional attachment to them. Which style do you think is actually more effective in getting the point across?
Well, so I did always like Jesse Ventura's character. And that was, I think, more sometimes a protection of his character, because he was a wrestler before he stepped into the booth.
Right.
That it would be weird. Same with Jerry Lawler. Like, he always wore that crown. He always wore his gear.
Definitely.
It was a thing where you want to maintain that if you decide to step back in the ring, it wouldn't be, well, you're not a wrestler anymore. You're this commentator guy. And Jesse and Michael Cole were able to do that, but they also came from a period where WWE only had like three or four people that ever held a microphone. You know, it's like Jesse and Gorilla and then Lord Alfred Hayes. And like, that's it, you know,
Mean Gene.
And then when Michael,
Mean Gene,
you know, Mean Gene. Yeah. See, now Mean Gene was like, he had credibility. Yep. And I was building on that. It's like, even when Michael Cole was backstage, he would be doing commentary too. And there'd be like him, Kevin Kelly, Jim Ross, and I think King were like the only four or five guys yeah. at that time. Mm-hmm. Now it feels like when they go backstage at NXT alone, there's three or four different people. Now that's getting into the argument of is NXT a brand or if it's developmental. If you want to if you're training people to be announcers, they need experience. I can understand putting more and more out there.
Right.
But WWE has like a dozen, two dozen announcers, right? They've got like an announcer on Raw. They got an announcer on SmackDown. They got an announcer on NXT. They got an announcer on NXT UK. That's just those four. And then that's not counting backstage, and that's not counting commentary. Right. When Michael Cole was doing backstage interviews, he was doing commentary. He was double dipping.
Right.
He would do like backstage on Raw and then do commentary on SmackDown. So to me, I think – so let me back up. I think it's good to be neutral. I have a position at Wildcat where I know people want me to succeed and they want me to stand out. And I actually go into a bit of a back and forth with some of the producers about how much of my personality I should or shouldn't show. Because again, I'm not trying to put myself over. I'm trying to put these other guys over.
Right.
So my approach whenever I'm doing a backstage interview with someone is I'm trying to play the normal guy so that he seems extraordinary. It's not that dissimilar to how great the dynamic is of Brock Lesnar with Paul Heyman standing next to him.
Right.
Paul Heyman is, this is normal person, so he makes the monster look even more like a monster because here's this normal guy. You get to see how small he is compared to him, how imposing he is compared to Lesnar. Lesnar's imposing on his own, but just left of a regular guy, it's even more impressive of a package.
Right.
So to me, part of it backstage, and Mean Gene would do this too, where he had personality, but he had to have personality not to overcome the performer that he's interviewing, but so that we in the audience trust him. You can't be nobody. And it's a balancing act. Like you have to show some character, because the idea for me at Wildcat is like, I'm the guy that people know. I know what's going on. What's going on with Wildcat? You can come to me and I can explain to you what's going on. So you got to get to know me. I think this is similar from Jim Ross. Like he was a character, but he was never a character to the degree where he was getting too over, where you want to just see Jim Ross. He always knew his place.
Right.
And I think some of the people backstage in NXT, they just seem like some random person. And part of that is because you don't get to know them. You don't get to know these announcers. Like Caleb Braxton is doing better now because Renee Young left,
right,
which means Charlie Caruso can move up into Renee's position and Kayla. So it's like the fact that it's just those two is the best thing for them, because you can start to trust Kayla and trust Charlie as being the authorities on what's going on. Yep. But if they then go, okay, well, now we got to bring up more announcers, and then you see more and more people backstage, I'm like, who is this person? Like, why are they even there? Why do I need you to interview this guy? Because they might as well just do the promo by themselves.
Well,
the whole point of
let me ask,
being there is to facilitate.
Let me ask you this, bringing up that question of who is this person and why are they there? Sin City, what is the name of the guy in AEW that's backstage that I can't remember, and I do not know why the guy's on that show at all?
Alex Marvez.
Yeah, Marvez. I was going to say, you say that, and then I can't remember what he's saying. You know, Marvez, what I understand is that he did, like, football.
Yeah.
He was, like, he did, and he did, like, backstage, like, online shows and things like that. He wasn't an on-air personality. It's not that dissimilar from, if you guys remember, Mike Adamley,
The
mid-2000s in WWE. Very, very credible. And that's what I'm saying, is like a credible person. You want to put someone on more credibility. And I like that he's consistent backstage, that this is the guy that we go to when we're backstage.
Yes.
That's a key thing, is that you don't want to have it be a bunch of different people, because then the audience is like, I don't know what's going on. It doesn't help that in WWE, they keep casting like people that look like Renee Young. So they're all like tall, blonde women.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, I feel bad because it's like, because there's like at least three of them, and they don't put their names on the bottom of the graphic. They don't tell me who they are.
Right.
Like, again, they don't want the audience to know. Like, they're not putting them over in any way, so I don't trust them, so I don't know them.
Exactly.
You have to know them a little. I was always a big fan of actually knowing the names of the referees as well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, in the sense of, like, not to the degree where they have to be over-involved or an overbooked match. Like, not everybody has to work like Earl Hebner.
Right.
You know? And I think AEW, again, maybe could be better about picking and choosing. Like, if they want to have Aubrey Edwards be the, like, when you, like, I was as a fan, when I saw Earl Hebner was in a match, I'd be like, oh, okay, some stuff might go down in this match because Earl lets a lot of stuff fly, but he also doesn't take any.
But you
see a more standard referee, I'm like, okay, it's more of a standard match.
And, exactly. But
and the, again, I always thought of that as like subtle storytelling. You know,
the most interesting point with that, I think, is that with the WWF, they started establishing Joey Morella as that role, and they would refer to him as the head referee. When he died, then it essentially was Dave Hebner until Earl had to take over because of Dave's heart attack that he had, and they just basically switched roles in the office and reffing. But you always knew.
We never found out how much Ted DiBiase paid them to have
the surgery. I know. Because they were, you know what, they were twins that never looked like each other until DiBiase got involved and, you know, made the wish come true. But it's always... go ahead.
Okay, so I was one thing I loved in Jericho's first run in WWE is it was something that wasn't acknowledged on commentary as much, is that he always mispronounced people's names.
Right.
He always called Lillian Garcia Vivian.
You're right.
Yep.
And... But he always referred to Earl Hebner as Dave, even though it was never Dave. It was always Earl. He would always call him Dave. And it was like, if you don't know, you don't know. And he was always doing jokes like that. It was like, if you don't get it, then it doesn't matter.
Right.
I'm telling a straight joke. But like, if you do, then it's hilarious. So just made me think of that.
But no, you're absolutely right. If Aubrey Edwards is going to be the head referee, then establish that, and there's no reason that it shouldn't be established. And the WWE had a track record of doing that, and then they stopped doing that, and then it's like they'll go back and forth on it, and it's like very simple, just make it consistent.
They had Mike Chioda, and that turned into, you know, he's not there anymore. So I guess it's Charles Robinson, but he doesn't seems to work as much as he used to.
Well, I think,
I just don't see him on television as much as I used to.
I think what they're doing too is because of the brand split, they're able to put the older referees, the tenured referees, on only one of the shows. Yeah. And that way, you know, you're giving them a little bit of a traveling break, but, you know, well, and now there's a permanent traveling break. But it's very interesting that you go along those lines and you think that these backstage interviewers and these referees, even your ring announcers, you know, you would know who they were in the WWE. And now every woman who's a ring announcer sounds just like Lillian Garcia.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Period. You know,
it's also like this weird, I don't know if you noticed this, it happened maybe a month or two ago. Again, I don't know when this will air, but in 1 week, all of the announcers, when they were doing like the boxing setting where they have the champion in the ring, they announce both people while they're in the ring.
Right.
They all started doing like this weirdly unnatural, aggressive tone to how they announce everybody that they weren't doing like the previous week. So it's like, it's weird when like, I was like, I know some kind of memo must have gone out because it wasn't just one announcer started doing it differently. It's that because they have so many and they all started going like, instead of being like, the Usos, they all, like they put this gruff in, like as if they all got told, like, you're not being more aggressive enough.
And I never, again, although I probably heard the name, but the male ring announcer they have who does Raw, I think, and does the, you know, some of the matches on the paper, he always does, you know, the Usos, you know, it's grandiose for every single person. It's just like, dude, you know.
We have a, our ring announcer at Wildcat, his name was Edward King, and he's like an MC at a lot of clubs and things in New Orleans, and he's got such a big personality, and he gives us a very unique, distinct feel because he's such a unique personality. Yep. To get back to like having a personality like that, is that he's still doing the announcing, he's still just adding energy, adding emphasis to the people when they come out, but he just has this kind of flavor that feels very New Orleans, very us. That the couple of times that he was on commentary and that we had another announcer in the ring and our announcer, whoever would be filling in for him, did a great job. It just was more standard announcing, and our crowd did not like it because it wasn't what they're used to. They liked the familiarity of the branding of us, but that's the difference, that we're our own thing. And where we're at is different from someone that's gotten more success. So I can't say that they're doing anything wrong. It's just different.
You just made a very, very good point. And that is, when you have a company that's local, you're able to condition your audience. When you have a company that is global, the one thing that they do is, so, and AEW is essentially trying to do it now because they're new. This is the time to do it. But the WWE, when they started in the early days, they started conditioning the fans to accept this, that, and that, right?
Yes.
The problem you encounter is they never thought about what happens between the gaps, because you've conditioned for this, but society changes and viewership changes. Yep. So therefore, you need to recondition the audience, which is one of the toughest things, as you just pointed out. Something as simple as a ring announcer just having to be replaced for a day because a guy's going on commentary and the fans didn't buy it. And that's what, if you look on the internet, 90% of what the fans bitch and complain about is just for that fact that they're so conditioned for something else that nothing else satisfies them.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's one of those, you know, I remember I attended a show. It was the Royal Rumble, I think, in 2017. It was in it was somewhere in Texas, and I think San Antonio.
Yeah, it was San Antonio.
It was the Alamo Dome show.
Right.
And so Kevin Owens and AJ Styles were the world champions at the time. And if you said that in like 2006, that like in 2017, like those would be the world champions of WWE, it would like blow your mind, right? You know? But when it happens, I remember the discontent that people kind of felt at the time and thinking, well, does this really matter? Like this is why the WWE doesn't placate to the internet, which, I mean, to get off on that, it's like the fact that they still acknowledge it like that. I mean, I will say that they say that because it's a subsect, like not everybody, you know, on that is talking about stuff is everybody, but everybody is on the internet. Like, you can't like, you're just talking about everybody. You can't just say the internet, like that's everyone, right? So but that's their problem, is that they're in their own bubble.
Right.
That I think there's a disconnect between what they're doing and what we're doing. And I think I credit that they do what they think is best, because you can tell them what you think is best, but if you tell them what you think is best and they give it to you and then you still complain, you can only do that so many times before they go, well, I'm just going to do what I want to do.
Right.
You know, like, because there's no right way to go. Is the truth is that no matter what you do, especially in any kind of art, there's always a negative and a positive to which way you're going to go. Well, right. I like to do this. Now, you ask everybody, what do you guys want to eat tonight? And everybody gives a different answer. So if you're you were like, well, you know what? I'm going to get what I wanted to get. If we can't agree, we're going to go with what I wanted to do. And I think Vince McMahon learned a long time ago, that's what I'm doing. Like, I'm going to do what I want to do. And I'm not saying that means he's right or he's wrong, but I mean, what would you do? You know, like, if you have enough people going, don't do this, and enough people doing, do this, what's the tie? It's yourself, right? So for better or for worse, it's just it's just its own thing, you know?
And that's why the backstage announcers, you know, Vince is going, what can I have for dinner? Titty meat. Give me some titty meat.
I mean, yeah, it's one of those, I mean, again, if the idea is who the person is backstage doesn't matter because you're getting all of your information online anyway.
Right.
So let's put a pretty person on screen that'll draw eyes. That's understandable. It's just, to me, as my own consumer, which is the only perspective I can really look at things from as my own, is I listen. I listen to the commentary. I always appreciate the information. So I want to believe the credibility of whoever's asking a question.
Well,
and if...
But think of it.
I don't know you. Like, I thought Renee Young was one of the best backstage correspondents they've ever had.
Right.
Because she just felt so sincere and believable that when they moved her away from it, I was like, no, like, because she's did that so well, even though she was getting promoted. And, you know, it's like, and she did great on Talking Smack. She did great on different things. But just, I thought her ability to look uncomfortable when it was over and the way she just presented, she would ask the same, like, obviously leading questions at every backstage, but I never rolled my eyes at anything that Renee said. And I don't think any of the talent ever gave her any guff about it too.
Right.
You know, you know, it's one of those things where wrestling is it's not a lot of, it's reinventing the wheel over and over again.
Right.
There's only so many questions you can ask a wrestler to get what you need them to say before it feels like you're just kind of saying the same thing all the time.
Well, and you just said my biggest pet peeve with, any kind of announcing or interviews backstage, and that is very simple. They do this stupid fucking hang ending where it's a cliffhanger because the talent walks off, and now the interviewers who don't have like the acting chops are sitting there with the mic in the hand and just. And it's like, that's 30 seconds of dead air. And the best is, you know, when you want to look at the right way to do things is you should have an opinion after that just happened.
And, you know, and Renee would do very subtle things that I guess, and she did it charmingly enough that I think it was okay, that she would not roll her eyes, but would give an obvious, if it was a heel that walked away, a disapproving kind of sentiment. Like, I can't believe you were like that. You were such a jerk. And if it was, that was nice and she enjoyed the interview, she would like be smiling, be happy. Like,
right.
Yeah, you go win. And again, it's that they've made them so neutral where they're not for or against anybody. Like sometimes it feels like Corey Graves is for Baron Corbin or he's against him. Michael Cole's for him or against him. So in the audience, you feel, okay, so am I for him or am I against him?
Right.
And again, I think it's that they're moving away from, I think in there, and like, it's not as black and white of what is this or that, but I think that that hurts. My opinion across the board, people need to have a much more rigid, knowing this is the villain and this is the hero.
Yep.
You can add sympathy layers. You can show sympathy to Negan, but he's still Negan. Like he's still the villain. Like you can still have, you can develop characters, but that doesn't mean that they're not still cast as those characters. And maybe it's, you know, wrestling is always very heavy-handed, that subtlety is sometimes a difficult thing to do. But I think when you take away the tools, again, the backstage person is there to be read. Otherwise, just put the microphone in the wrestler's hand. Like, why do you need someone to ask the question if not to filter? That's why Mean Gene was so great, because he would call them out on the ridiculous. Every Macho Man promo backstage is better because of my Mean Gene next to him going like, whoa, now wait a minute. Like, you know, are you saying, and then, you know, and then he goes off and he's forced to acknowledge the normalcy of WWE, which makes him feel so much more zany. Like if you, all the promos that Macho Man does without Mean Gene are not as strong in my opinion, because you don't have that contrast of a guy looking at him and then doing like the Jim Halpert look at the camera. Like, are you seeing this?
Right.
And it's like, yeah. And all those, like, his most famous ones, like the cream of the crop, you know, maybe I am insane. All of those are all with the sick man, you know?
Well,
some of the ones that I feel like didn't land. So you're saying.
Well, I was going to say, you can look at that. I mean, Gene also basically propped up Hogan, and Hogan will be the first to tell you. And then look at what Michael Cole did for The Rock.
Yes. Yep. And Kevin Kelly and the coach, like, it's one of those things where the banter back and forth, you know, you ask the question, you know, and the crowd erupts, and you're not even listening to what the announcer's saying. Like, by the end of like 99 or early 2000, when The Rock was getting promos, they would cut backstage and the person's talking, like, it's Kevin Kelly talking, and you can't even hear him because the crowd is losing their mind because they know The Rock's about to talk.
Right.
But you still need him there as the contrast to, ladies and gentlemen, The Rock, and then I give, which if they just cut back to The Rock standing there alone, it's not as impressive. Like, the dynamic works in the real person versus, you know, like, I'm part of the show, but I'm not in the show.
Right. You know? And you know
they're
what?
In the show. They are in the show.
What's very interesting, too, as we get to kind of get close to wrapping up, you just sparked a thought in my head, too, that I think really, really, if they do acknowledge this, it's really bad acting usually. But the key to a good interview is the fear you should have when you're dealing yes. with someone who's that fucking big.
Yes, yes, no. Again, it's not that different from commentary. The idea is to sell. If yep. if I'm doing an interview with, so we have a Revolution champion at Wildcat. His name is Jace Fowler, and he's like an everyman. He was part of a group called the Mobile Home Mob. That doesn't, you know, with ZZ. You guys remember ZZ from Tough
yeah.
Enough?
Like, yeah.
He was part of the group for a little while. So he's like an everyman, and his story was that he had to keep trying and lose, and then try and then lose. So when I talk to him, I interview him like he's just another guy
right.
to sell the impressiveness that he was able to win the championship because he worked his ass off to become someone that can capture this championship. And it's that much more impressive that he did that because of it. But then if I'm interviewing Luke Hawks, while I'm positive, he's a big guy and Luke will say whatever he wants. So I got to be kind of trepidatious because you don't know what Luke's going to say.
Right.
Versus PJ, who's like an all-American guy where you can feel like, you know, like, I can ask you whatever I need to ask you, and you'll be respectful, kind of thing.
Wait.
Or Edrin, or, you know, whatever it is.
But you know what? That, and again, we're about to wrap, but you just brought another thought in my head that really works, and that is someone like PJ is perfect in terms of you have that all-American style, you have that baby face, white meat, you know, this wonderful... And you just have a good connection backstage. There's a positive energy. As soon as he goes heel,
yeah,
it fucking works because you helped yeah. create that persona.
Yeah,
and now that makes it easier. Exactly.
You care about it. So then when they change, you're upset that they change.
Right.
You don't care about them as the. It's all about investing and caring about the characters.
And the
you know,
great
there are characters that even like on television, if a good character is written. You'll care if they change, even if you didn't care about the person, because you just can respect the development of the story.
And the greatest example in wrestling that ever happened was when they turned Andre the Giant heel. Because Andre yes. was not a talker because of his accent. And everything from like Mean Gene, it would be this outrage that this great... guy who was a friend of Hogan and has been this hero to many kids for so many years. You know, it worked. And that's what the NWO worked as well, even though they were easier at putting themselves over with that. But it worked along the yeah. same lines because I think even, you know, again, Mean Gene, conduit here. But with that first interview in the ring, as soon as... the, you know, the match ended at Bash at the Beach, Gene says something like, you know, Hulk Hogan, how could you?
How yeah. could you? Yeah. Mean Gene feels betrayed. Like, he's supposed right. to talk to him, and he's been doing interviews with him for years and always been supportive of him, that it's like he's one of those guys that wants to throw the trash in the ring. Again, that moment is not made, but so strongly helped by the fact right. that he's interviewed by Mean Gene, all those things echo. When you said the Andre thing, when he crashes Piper's Pit, Bobby Heenan's with him.
Right.
Bobby Heenan didn't do a lot. It's not that dissimilar from Paul Heyman with Roman now.
Right.
Like, he hasn't really been speaking for him. It's just a visual cue to the audience of like, wait a minute, you've changed because you would never be seen with this other person.
Yep.
So the fact that you are, and so no matter how much I want to tell myself, like, maybe this isn't this, maybe it's this, then you do a wide shot and you see Heenan with him or you see Heyman with him and you're reminded, no, things are not okay because you're with this guy that's the scum of the earth.
And another thing is on that instance of you have Piper's Pit where Piper had just turned face because the crowd had basically made him the face. he has Hogan on, and they do that great thing where the first week they give Andre this award, and Hogan comes out there to kind of present it to him type of thing. And then Hogan gets an award. But it's Jesse who says, I got something for you next week. And Ventura was the person who came out first and said, you know, come on out, Andre. And Andre comes out, and then Heenan's right behind him. So he didn't have to say much of anything, because as soon as Hogan sees him, Hogan now gets to play the, what are you doing with him, man? What is this? And then,
and again,
and Ventura laughs. It's great.
Exactly. Because of hate, because you know from the story what you're listening with commentary that if Jesse's backing you, you're probably not. It's not that dissimilar from like you have like a friend who likes a certain kind of movie, right? Then you see a new one come out. You go, oh, I don't know if this is any good. Should I see it? You ask your friend because you trust his opinion on this thing. The dynamic of the commentary split is, you know, JR backs this person, I back this person, I always back Jim Ross. So then if he backs a new guy, you go, okay, well, I guess I back him too.
Yeah.
And vice versa. If you're Jesse Ventura, always griping about this guy needs to do this and always advocating for people to cheat because it's what you got to do, then it's that much more upsetting when someone turns and he's supportive of it, because you know that that means that they're really on the other side of the aisle. And I think that that's really lost now in announcing, and is why I think a lot of people kind of tune it out, because they're not really getting anything from it, unless, because if you're only talking about the story that's playing on screen verbatim, you don't need it, because you're seeing it. The point is to echo it in a way that makes the action on screen stronger.
Yeah,
you know, like it's not just like when I was a kid. And even now, like, I'll do certain projects and I'll just put wrestling on in the background and I won't watch it. Like, it'll just, so I'm basically just listening to commentary. Not that different from listening to like sports radio, like baseball games, football games with just the announcing. And when I do that, it's nice when you can hear them talking about what's literally happening. And it's not nearly as bad watching the product now if you're not watching it, because it doesn't feel so derivative.
Right.
Because I'm going, well, I'm not seeing it, so I don't know what's going on. So hearing it, it's like, that's great. But when you're watching it, you can feel how derivative it is, because they're not adding anything extra beyond that.
Right.
Whereas when I brought up Paul Heyman and Jim Ross, the aggression they would have towards each other made it feel like, man, this must be a big deal, because these guys are really worked up over this. Like, like, it's just, you know, Al Snow versus Christian. But, like, you know, like, they make me it, they make it more important than that.
Yeah.
And then it is more important than that, you know? And that's the idea, is that you don't want to turn on... The idea is to sell, right? Which is, I think that's the biggest thing, is the WWE. They're on top of the world. They don't need to sell you on their brand beyond trying to get you to invest in the brand, not in the story, because they know that they're there. Whereas I'm in a position with Wildcat where I'm trying to sell you, like, I've got so much wrestling. I got the network. I got AEW. I got Impact. I got Ring of Honor. I got NWA. I got all this stuff. Why should I watch Wildcat Sports? And I'm trying to get you, like, no, dude, this is the best wrestling. You've got to watch this.
Right.
And my job is to hook you and make you invested in it. Not just the wrestlers. Like, we're all working really hard to get you to stick with it and to keep sticking with it.
Speaking of that, fans listening and watching, please, I encourage you to check out Sammy's social media. Where can they find you, Sammy?
Well, okay, so I'm on all the social media stuff, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. It's usually at @the_Sammy_Kiss. But if you look for Sammy Kiss, I'm everywhere. I'm under Sammy Kiss. And then also look for Wildcat Sports. It's Wildcat with a K, but we're on YouTube, Instagram. We upload new matches every week on YouTube, and hopefully we'll be able to start putting up, like, brand new content. You know, right now, because of the pandemic, we're not able to produce, but because of that, we really need as much support as we can, so as many views and support to, you know, like our channel and support us, so that we can keep that momentum going, so that when we do get started, we know people can be informed and we can hit the ground running that way.
That's awesome, brother. We appreciate you spending the time talking with us, and
thank you, man. I had a lot of fun.
I it's been a great time, and we'll give you this sign off from good old JR. And that is, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening and watching to the great Sonic Kiss.
Oh, I feel so honored. I appreciate that.
All right, everyone, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.